You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, the International Maritime Organization, UN body regulating shipping, moving toward net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. And they have intermediate benchmarks in both 2030 and 2040. And that's pushing demand for low carbon fuels, and ethanol may be well positioned. Ankit Chandra of the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council notes that the U.S. already has an 18 billion gallon ethanol infrastructure, steady production, and record exports near 2 billion gallons last year, along with ports, rail, and barge links. Simultaneously, global sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, market is projected to surge from roughly $2.06 billion in 2025 to $25.62 billion by 2030, growing at a compound annual growth rate of 65.5%. In the meantime, global marine biofuel markets used in shipping were valued at $3.94 billion last year and forecast to nearly double by 2034. Now, for U.S. farmers, these trends could mean more demand for corn ethanol and feedstocks like soy oil or biomass that feed into that sustainable aviation fuel and marine blend stock supply chains. But success will depend on life cycle carbon certification, rules under the IMO and SAF programs, engine approvals, and investments in conversion and export logistics. U.S. beef imports climbing this year. Pork imports continue to ease. Now, according to USDA data, through early September, total beef imports reaching 1.82 million metric tons. It's up 8% from last year. South America is gaining ground. Now, Canada remains the top supplier into the U.S., 487,000 metric tons, but volumes down 13% year over year. Australia shipping 386,000 metric tons. That's up 21% on herd recovery and tariff advantages, while Brazil surged 56% to 251,000 metric tons, displacing Mexico as the third largest supplier. Imports from Uruguay up 35%, adding to the South American push. But pork imports, by contrast, 261,000 metric tons, down 11% from last year. Canada still leads at 169,000 metric tons, but volumes fell 12%. Mexico follows with 24,000 metric tons, slightly edging out Denmark. While the U.S. seafood markets are showing a blend of stability and firmness this week, that's according to Erner Berry. Domestic shrimp prices steady to firm as production slowly increases, and domestic browns remain steady but with less than adequate supply. Imported shrimp markets continue to climb, especially the black tigers and whites, as tariffs and replacement cost push prices higher. Catfish, both domestic and imported, holding steady, though imports face tighter supplies. Atlantic Farm salmon prices steady. Mai-mai, firm on limited production and tariff-related cost. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm honored to serve as the 14th Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works. And as President Trump, Secretary Hegseth, and Secretary Driscoll's top official responsible for overseeing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Civil Works mission, and have been on the job for 6.5 weeks.
Adam Tell is Assistant Secretary of Army for Civil Works at a recent Senate oversight hearing.
During this time, I've been working alongside General Graham and his team to ensure that the Army Civil Works program is positioned to deliver on President Trump's vision for our country and on its critical mission, which this committee has had an important role in defining. As I said, during the consideration of my nomination before this committee, I'm honored to help lead the Army Civil Works mission. It touches small and large communities throughout the country, and very few government agencies' missions capture the interests of American citizens, landowners, communities, states, jobs, job creators, and their representatives here in Washington quite like this one. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers originated in 1775, before the Declaration of Independence was even signed. The America we know today developed in large part as a result of the work of the Corps. Congress has given the Corps two main missions in addition to its original navigation mission: fledge damage reduction and ensuring the future availability of our aquatic resources. Because the Civil Works program is important to the American public and their elected representatives here in Washington, during my first weeks, I've been working to establish greater consistency and accountability across the four layers of this enterprise, which consists of my office and the Corps' headquarters, divisions, and districts. I intend to spend my time in this job ensuring that the Corps carries out its missions to benefit the American public as effectively, as quickly, and as efficiently as possible. We must optimize our program for quality, speed, and cost if we want to do our part to protect lives and commerce, as President Trump is delivering on his vision to ensure that the United States remains the greatest nation in the history of the world during the 21st century. Our partners here on Capitol Hill, and particularly on this committee, have been pivotal in supporting this enterprise, and I request your partnership as I work with General Graham to ensure the Civil Works program evolves to become more efficient and consistent to meet our modern demands. To deliver against that workload, we must work in partnership with the Congress, throughout the executive branch, and with our stakeholders to drive efficiency, collaboration, and results in an environment that is necessarily resource constrained. In addition to driving more efficiency into the Civil Works program, we must continue to lift the federal regulatory burden on the public. This administration is committed to ending the last 5 decades of confusing and ever-changing definitions of the term waters of the United States under the Clean Water Act of 1972. Together with Administrator Zeldin and President Trump's Environmental Protection Agency, the Army has already issued guidance that follows the Supreme Court's Sackett decision. And we will move quickly to issue a permanent definition that follows the post-Sackett law of the land, reduces red tape, cuts overall permitting costs, lowers the cost of doing business in communities across the country, and continues to protect America's navigable waters. In July, my office made much-needed changes to our National Environmental Policy Act implementing procedures that will reform, modernize, and expedite the Corps' environmental reviews, eliminate unnecessary delays, and help ensure the growth of highly cost-effective, reliable infrastructure projects across the nation. We also recognize the opportunities and benefits provided to this program through WERDA 2024 and previous WERDAs, which this committee has had such an important role in shaping. These efforts were intended to address navigation, reservoir management, the beneficial use of dredge material, and many other issues. I look forward to gaining insight today about your views and interests so that together we can serve America's vital infrastructure needs.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What's behind this surge in Brazilian imports are both expected issues, such as the seasonality of the Brazilian market, and unexpected factors related to the specific conditions we are seeing in 2025.
Brazil imported a record 4.8 million tons of fertilizer in July. Thomas Pernias with StoneX.
On the seasonal side, Brazilian demand typically increases in the beginning of the second half of the year and usually remains resilient until October. So specifically, phosphate and potash imports in Brazil usually peak between June and September. So due to the Brazilian crop calendar, it is expected to some extent that Brazilian fertilizer demand will rise during this period. But there is another and more interesting reason for this surge in Brazilian imports, because Brazilian producers are facing a very challenging scenario in 2025. Fertilizer prices are high, grain prices are weak, trade ratios are among the worst of the last few years, and higher interest rates make just everything more difficult and more expensive. Brazilian buyers are looking for ways to minimize production costs. In the phosphate segment, for example, MAP supply is scarce, prices discourage negotiations, and as a result, importers are preferring less concentrated products such as SSP, such as NP, because these can be cheaper, sometimes easier to find, and in many cases in 2025, they offered a more favorable cost benefit. In the nitrogen segment, we see a similar trend. The urea market is tight, China blocked exports for much of the year, and Indian demand pushed prices higher. So Brazilian buyers increased imports of ammonium sulfate, also a less concentrated product, to compensate this shortage of urea in 2025. However, the challenge is that less concentrated products and less concentrated fertilizers, they require more tons to provide the same nutrients found in more concentrated products, such as urea, MAP, or DAP. So this means that Brazilian market literally needs more tons to provide and supply its producers for the next season. Basically, when it comes to the fertilizer market, Russia is by far the largest supplier for Brazilian buyers, because Russian supply accounted for almost 30% of Brazil's fertilizer imports in 2025. In fact, 52% of the MOP imported by Brazil came from Russia, and 46% of the MAP as well. So this reliance on Russian supply makes it very difficult and unlikely that Brazil would be able to redirect this demand to other suppliers in the short term. So that's why fears of new sanctions disrupting fertilizer trade flows are totally understandable. Brazilian buyers would face great difficulty sourcing their needs elsewhere. So any announcements of new tariffs or sanctions in the fertilizer market, they could throw and send prices skyrocketing, and this would pose a serious threat for Brazilian producers. And let's not forget that Brazil recently launched its national fertilizer plan, aiming to reduce external dependency. However, these measures will take years or perhaps decades to have a real impact on the Brazilian fertilizer market.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It really continues a trend, maybe speeds up the trend that's been in place for quite some time.
So far this year, China hasn't bought any U.S. soybeans. They're buying from Brazil. Arlen Suderman is chief commodities economist with StoneX.
If we look back over the last 15 years, about 2011, we saw Brazil's currency start to break hard and to weaken relative to the dollar. So that meant that for China looking to buy soybeans, soybeans would be cheaper to buy from Brazil when they have them available. And so that incentivized Brazil to expand production of soybean production. And so we've kind of got into this mode where China would buy all they could from Brazil, and then whatever else they needed, they would buy from the United States. But as Brazil continued to expand, they got more and more market share. And then the trade tensions between the U.S. and China simply have accelerated that, as China has been building up its reserves for the possibility that it could survive without buying any soybeans from the United States. And we're really getting close to that point where they can do so now.
And he explains the situation now creating chaos for farmers.
Well, from a practical standpoint, I'll give an example. In the northwestern Midwest and farmers in the Dakotas, Minnesota, a lot of those soybeans would be loaded right from the combine and onto rail and would be railed to the Pacific Northwest ports for shipment to China, because we would be aggressively trying to fill those orders even as we're harvesting them. And those soybeans would not need storage space, so to speak, because they were being moved out pretty quickly. In the absence of any orders for soybeans going through China, there's essentially not a rail bid in many of those places. So the soybeans, and they have a bumper crop in that area of the Midwest this year with likely record yields for both corn and soybeans. That means they have to find more storage space that they do not have. So whereas the bids for those soybeans might ordinarily be 70, 75 cents below the nearby futures price for soybeans, this year they're twice that at 150 cents under, or even 170 cents under nearby futures. So the farmer is getting hit with low futures prices, but even lower cash prices because of that lack of demand. They're having to try to come up with a place to store it to hopefully capture some recovery in that basis. But overall, it's creating a tremendous problem for the farmers in that region. And China kind of joys in that, because they know the farm sector is one of the biggest support groups for President Trump in the last several elections.
So with China absent from the market, where will the U.S. go with soybeans?
It's more about finding lots of smaller buyers. China is the big buyer in the world, so to speak. They're the world's largest importer of commodities. We have seen, as China has pretty much occupied and used the full capacity of Brazilian ports to import its soybeans, that has pushed basis higher there in Brazil and squeezed out many of the smaller customers. And we have seen a return of some of those customers to the United States. So it's a partial offset, I would say about 10 to 20% offset of the lost Chinese business to this point. But still, without the Chinese business, we don't have enough domestic demand built yet. If we get this biofuel program built the way the Trump administration is trying to build it, then it can go a lot further toward offsetting, but that's going to take 2 to 3 years to develop.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Whether it's supporting local meat processors through the ups and downs of cattle cycles in South Dakota, or working with chicken farmers on innovative energy solutions to power towns in North Carolina, I've witnessed how you put rural development into practice with the people you serve.
Sochi Torres-Small is former Deputy Secretary at USDA testifying before a House Ag Subcommittee on Rural Development.
You know that local know-how needs to be in the driver's seat, and the government's job is to support that vision. You've also seen how vital USDA staff are to that work. Rural Development is the only agency in D.C. with a focus on rural America. That experience matters. I've worked with staff whose early experience providing housing or water loans in rural places has made them more able to stretch flexibilities in the midst of a disaster or save thousands of dollars on applications and reporting for rural people. But DOGE cuts and oversights and recent staff departure incentives hobble an already struggling mission. While I know this subcommittee isn't responsible for staff funding, your oversight is invaluable. Many state and field offices are currently operating at half capacity. In some places, it's worse, like Mississippi, where 90% of rural development staff were cut last year. Nationally, only 16 engineers remain in the RD state system. Vital projects are sitting on desks waiting for approval. Phone calls are going unanswered for months. That's not serving rural people. Let me be clear. The problem I'm raising here today isn't simply that federal staffing was cut. The problem is that those cuts happened without consulting the very people they affect. Rural Americans are more than willing to tell us what is working and what isn't, if only we take the time to listen. And that brings me to my second point. When I talk with people working to make a difference for the places they live, they ask for straightforward applications to programs that fit their vision. People often ask what I've seen in other places that might inform how they can solve the challenges they face. In the long term, we need to pivot from a "there's a program for that," or all of the acronyms, as Chairman Johnson mentioned, to "we'll invest in your strategy. Here's some people who found success with similar efforts, and we'll be with you every step of the way." When it comes to straightforward investments, we need to resist the temptation of adding a program to solve every problem, and instead double down on grant investments and bread and butter programs like community facilities that can fund a lot of different things. We need to consider multi-year funding that gives a longer runway to adjust to the challenges of federal grants. We need to invest in technical assistance from partners who have the relevant experience and can help with the necessary complicated bits. And we need to incentivize USDA staff to clean up programs, to leverage technology, and to identify places where Congress can simplify applications and reporting. For years, rural Americans have been telling us they don't believe government serves the people working hardest to get by. Today, and while I was in office, rural people have higher rates of suicide, fewer doctors, less treatment for addiction, lower wages, and higher mortgage costs. That's why this committee is so crucial. I have to admit, my soul is just happy seeing this bipartisan effort, because the rural way of life is worth fighting for. If we listen to the rural people we depend on for food, fiber, energy, and land stewardship, if we invest in their ideas, there's no limit to what rural America can accomplish.
It's Agriculture Today.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So we have talked a lot over the last few years about demand destruction, about farmers having plenty of fertilizer in the soil, looking at cutting back their application rates. And when it really comes down to it, you don't see that happening. Typically, we stick to our patterns. We stick to our rotations.
Josh Linville is Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX.
This year is completely different. You're seeing a lot of people talk about this year in terms of how it correlates to the 1980s, the worst period in farmer most people have ever seen. And right now, the farmers are hurting bad enough. They're frankly throwing their hands up in the air and saying, I cannot make money today. I cannot cash flow the 2026 crop that includes this fall and spring fertilizer that's coming up. I may have to finally follow through with my threat to cut my application rate. And if all of a sudden we get into the fall season and that application does not occur, now all of a sudden we're talking about more supplies. This should weigh on price ideas unless the demand comes back in the spring. It's one of those things we could cover 20 minutes walking through the different scenarios, how the different dominoes could fall. But really to bring it up into one point, this is a season unlike every other. We always joke about it. It doesn't matter if you have 20 years of experience in this industry. You don't have 20 years. You have 20 single years of experience. They're all different. This one looks like it could stand out.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX.
Well, in the United States, we alternate between corn and soybeans. That's where we get the best disease control, just through culturally alternating those crops. And so farmers like to keep in those rotations between corn and soybeans back and forth year to year. And so they hope to be able to continue to do so. When we look at alternatives, it becomes more challenging. Certainly the industry is chasing other alternatives to develop the markets in Africa or elsewhere, but that's going to take considerable time to do so. Ironically, just yesterday I had a group of clients in our office in the United States from Brazil, and they were asking me the same question, because what they're seeing now is a growth in demand for the soybeans, fueling the expansion of production there as they take market share away from the United States. But overall demand in China is starting to flatten out. And so their concern is once they get that market share away from the United States and they're continuing to expand production and Chinese demand has flattened out, then where do they go? And the United States at least has a biofuel program that is well developed now and continuing to develop, but it's much further along than where it is in Brazil. They're a number of years behind where they need to be able to absorb the extra soybeans they'll be producing once they fully have filled that U.S. niche going into China. They're worried about what they're going to do with their surplus soybeans. So that continues to be a problem, not just for us, but in the future will be for Brazil as well.
Could U.S. sanctions on Brazil affect their fertilizer use? Thomas Pernias with StoneX.
If sanctions were applied to the fertilizer market, and if that meant that Russian products suddenly became inaccessible for Brazilian producers, we would be talking about a worst-case scenario for Brazil, because Brazil would not be able to redirect and shift its demand to other suppliers in just a few weeks. Right. We're dealing here with more than 10 million tons of Russian products that are imported by Brazil every single year. Mm-hmm. And for Brazilian producers, this would mean higher fertilizer costs, this would mean squeezed margins, demand destruction, and possibly a decrease in agricultural production. Let's remember that Brazil imports nearly 85% of the fertilizer used in the domestic market.
Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
When you raise dryland cotton, one of the only things you control is input costs. Reduce your seed costs by as much as 75% without sacrificing yield potential with BSD 9X cotton from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Perfectly adapted for dryland acres, BSD 9X is large seed and has excellent early season vigor and consistently yields at the top in university trials. Find out about BSD 9X by calling 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.